This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today I have with me...
Bronwyn McManus.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Bronwyn, you're living in a 10-acre... 18-acre lifestyle block. Out just past the army camp.
Yep.
And you're on this road, there's a lot of those blocks, are there? Is that the basic...
There's about 30 houses on the road, and there's only about 4 larger farms left on the road now.
Okay. So you've been here a long time?
Since the 2004 flood, so what, 19 years?
Oh, right, yeah, nearly 20 years. Yeah. So has it been that many blocks, lifestyle blocks, all the time, or has it changed in the time you've been here?
No, there's probably been another 1, 2, 3, 4. Maybe 4 smaller blocks,
okay.
Subdivided off, and then farm across the road has actually been broken down from a large farm down into smaller blocks with, sadly, pine trees on the hills, and then dairy runoff at the front.
Oh, so okay, yeah, because it goes right up into the hills at the back, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So what made you choose to live out here?
Well, we originally were living in England for 9 years back in the 80s, and when we came home, we wanted to live out in the country, so we originally bought a place down south of Tokomaru, and were there for 15 years on a 15-acre lifestyle block, and really wanted to be off the main road because we'd had several burglaries, and we were right on the main road, and there was a lot of traffic noise, and I wanted to get away from that. It was also a particularly windy area. Not that you can avoid that in the Manawatu. Yeah. And then this place, I just happened to spot it one day.
Okay.
And we came and looked at it and thought it was really good, and decided we would move here because it's well off the main road. It's quiet, a bit more secluded. Yeah. So, my husband planted the gully. He wanted somewhere to plant native trees, and the small gully that we've got was a good...
Okay. Yeah.
Bit easier than trying to get shelter belts established at our other property.
Yeah. So when I came out to New Zealand, there was the talk of 10-acre blocks, but are there a lot of lifestyle blocks that are larger than that, or were larger than that?
No, it was around the 10-acre block. I mean, like the ones my property's a 10 and an 8-acre block of titles, so that's why it's 18. Right. But some places are 20, but most, you know, in the 70s, the 10-acre block was a thing that people went for.
And did they actually sort of farm those blocks, or it's just lifestyle, it's nice to have the views and you're not right next to the
name? I think most people try and farm them and have a bit of stock and stuff like that on it, and try and do farming. Other people will lease it out, but... Yeah, most people I know have stock on it themselves.
Okay, so it's mainly grazing that they use them
for. I think so, And, I mean, something like this is good. We end up getting horses. My daughter got involved in horses.
Okay.
So it's sort of nice to have a place where you could ride and have a horse.
Yeah. So I'd be thinking, is it an economic use of the land? Because when they talk about, you know, farming, if it's all being broken up, are we going to get the productivity from that?
I think it gets broken up because I suppose the farmers can make more money out of selling off 5 or 16-acre blocks than what that land could be, you know, productive-wise. And so I think that influences it, and then people are willing to pay the price to live from the urban area to live in the country. So,
But it's mainly people who will commute into town for work and
I mean, you could never make a living off it. You do need at least one income.
Yeah.
Nowadays, two incomes. So, you couldn't have a farming lifestyle off it. But so it basically, for most people, it gives a bit of food for the freezer, meat for the freezer, a nice quiet country lifestyle. If you enjoy gardening and having, like, we've planted native trees and stuff around, it's just a nice lifestyle.
Yeah, you get a nice environment.
Yeah.
So is it a strong community that you have?
Yeah, I find the country community is supportive, but not in your face.
So if
you needed to yell out, like today I was down planting trees with a neighbour in a big gully. They had 600 trees to plant.
Yeah.
And so they put the word out and a group of us went down and gave them a hand. So, and if anyone needs, like when I've had trees down and stuff that have perhaps blocked the driveway, usually the farmers will come up with their tractors and chainsaws and help clear the driveway. Yeah. So everyone will pitch in when you need a hand.
I was on one stage on a 4-acre, well, there's a lot of 4-acre blocks. It did strike me as probably people who, they like to be sociable, but if you're far enough away from the neighbours, you choose when to mix
I mean, it's the same. People will stop. A few people will drive past you and just wave, but there's others that will always stop and have a chat if you're walking down the road and stuff like that. So, I suppose it's the same in town too. Your neighbours will...
Well, you probably hardly ever see the neighbours in town, actually. And what about then first, do people tend to, if they move out here, they tend to stay long term?
Interestingly, our road has been a fairly stable, like we've been here 19 years. Mm. The people above us have been here longer than us.
Yeah.
But I think the... other statistics say that a lot of people end up staying only 5 or 6 years. They tend to move on or find that it's not the lifestyle for them because it's a big...
There's a lot of work involved.
Huge amount of work and, like, organising holidays when you've got animals and even just with dogs and horses, you've always got to find someone that can feed them, keep an eye on them or get someone that is competent enough to stay in your home while you're away.
Yeah.
So
there's sort of the dream of the lifestyle, but the actual living of it
It's a bit of a noose around your neck because there's always something to do. Like, you know, this wind's yesterday, there's a big tree that's got blown down. Thankfully, that's in the paddock, but it'll have to be cleaned up and tidied up, and the fence needs to be fixed. Mm. So.
And it'll give you firewood for next winter.
Yeah. There is. It's an ideal lifestyle, but it's a huge commitment, and there's always something that needs to be done. It's never
so is it sort of young families that go for that ideal? You know, you've got even preschool children, and you can have a pet lamb, and we can do that. Is it that
I think so. Again, I was thinking of this road, we've had a few new younger families move in, so I think people do like the lifestyle of having the country life for your kids, and which has been great for my two kids. That they've really, especially my daughter gained a lot out of it because she had horses and pet lambs for school ag days, and we had goats and pet calves. And
she get very involved in caring for them.
Yeah, she was good actually. She enjoyed the competitiveness, I think, of showing your animals at school and stuff.
So she went to a sort of country style school that had those activities.
So you always had your pet days and stuff. And it was fun. It was always good to get them outside after school. They had to have their pets to look after.
Yeah.
But again, that was a bind too, because for several months you always had a pet lamb that you're constantly feeding every day, twice a day, and nagging at the kids to go and do their chores. So
is it so when they're up to about, 13, 14, it's really good, but once they become teenagers and there's all the activities in town, were you a permanent taxi for them?
Or? Yeah, you mean definitely, that's the other downside is, for the kids when they're at primary school, I had to drive them into primary school because when we moved to Linton, before that, the school bus used to stop at our gate so the kids could walk to the gate, get on the bus and get dropped off at sort of picked up at 8:30 and dropped off at 3:30 sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But then when we moved up here, I had to drive them to school. There was no school bus, so I had to drive them back to school. So that was a big... And if you're trying to work, it's really hard to get that 9 to 3 type of job that you can fit in with the school run. So, again, I'd... Yeah, that makes it difficult.
Because after school care would be a problem. If you're in town, there's all those...
And back then, there wasn't, when my kids were little, there wasn't a lot of after-school, you know, professional after-school care. You were really looking for neighbours, but...
So what did you do? You stopped work at three? Or
I ended up doing teacher aid work, so that meant I was working school hours.
Yeah.
And, that sort of got me through that type of thing, and that was a choice I made because... Working full time was just too hard with kids.
Because you couldn't even leave the kids to make their own way home.
No, they needed to be. You know, we were quite a few. Well, how many kilometres?
Was there any sort of carpooling in the road then? Or?
No, not up here because my kids were the only ones that were going back to their original school. So that is an issue with living in the country. If your kids get involved in sports or after school activities, then I only left my son in town once, but at least we had cell phones then. And it was always so it was just getting them home because you know the school bus only came when they're at high school. There was no after-school, you know, delayed school bus for sports or anything. So, you often they'd get home, then they'd be back in the car going back into town. Or you have to organise pick-up points so that you could pick them up and then get them.
Is it cheaper living out here or in town?
I don't know because... I've never lived in town and to know the difference. I suppose you've got, if you're keen on gardening and you're happy to kill your own animals, you know, you've got lamb and beef. So food-wise, you probably make savings. But
you'd be on septic tanks as well?
Yeah, see, that's the other thing too. You've got to have a septic tank and look after that as well. So, you know, that's...
Yeah. Is that a lot of work? You got needs cleaning out every couple of years or so?
We upgraded because our old the original septic tank wasn't working properly, and so we had to upgrade. And now because that's got a pump and things in it, it means that we have to have that checked. So that costs you a couple of $100s, and then you've got maintenance if there's any maintenance issues. So there is an expense, and the modern units are expensive too compared to the old style septic tank. So
is that because of health requirements now or something? Or
I think it's also for the environmental factors that you're not discharging. You know, just your tank's not just discharging.
So you don't just have a filtration bed, or
you're meant to have filtration beds, but some of the older ones, you know, they get blocked up and things don't work properly. So
and they're not regularly inspected, or.
Not that I know of. Not the old-fashioned ones that you just had a tank and an outfly. I think people are getting caught. If you've got an older property, an older septic tank, if you sell up, the council catches up with you and you have to upgrade. Right standard. So,
I thought my understanding was the filtration bed can be a really good place for growing. I don't know if you'd use sort of... fruit trees or whatever, but for shrubs and so on, you've got a good water supply out there and makes it quite fertile.
I think our old tank down when in our first property, that just basically went from the tank across the paddock and down the bank, you know. You could see in the
into the stream,
well, just down a bank, and which probably there's a bit of dampness down the bank, but you know, you could see in the summertime when it was really brown all around, and there was this lovely big green patch going down the bank because it was still being fed with water. So I think it's the environmental factors, you know, and so worried about the nitrates and the bacteria and stuff. Yeah. So yeah.
Well, mind you, I suppose if it's just a one small family, then you're not going to be hit too much.
No, it's just.
Now you said if you like nice and quiet in the country, but I had sort of. People living in the country should realise that they're actually living in an industrial zone. So it's all production. So I expect tractors going late at night when it's urgent things to do.
No, we're lucky. There's only down the bottom of the road. There's two dairy farms, and then across the road here, it's been a sheep and beef. So apart from And the farmers aren't up at the crack of dawn, you know.
Yeah, so it's basically just move stock a bit, maintain the fences.
You really only hear the tractors if they're regularly feeding out hay or silage. Yeah. So that's never really early or really late. So I think it would be worse if you're in an area, I think like up in Auckland area and Hamilton where the... horticultural land's getting used, getting gobbled up, and the suburbs are coming out, and then people are getting upset at the noise of the tractors and the mud on the road and things like that.
Yeah, I suppose it's loads of cropping.
They're probably spraying and planting and harvesting fairly regularly, because it's agricultural, it's not really a problem.
So you said that there are some farms here and then the sort of lifestyle blocks. Do the people mix well together, or are there distinct communities? Yeah. Or?
I have to admit, I think as a lifestyle block owner, you can't, unless you can afford it, but most of us can't afford all the tractors and the heavy machinery, so you do need to be friends with your larger farmer, because there are times when you do need a digger and or a tractor to pull something out, or, you know, stock die, that's the other thing, you know, stock die, so, you know, it's a bit of a hole to dig for a cow to go in.
Oh, right, yeah.
Things like that.
You've had that happen?
Often? Yeah, and we've lost a couple of horses, so they're buried on the property as well.
Okay.
Along with all the pet lambs and others.
So is there any sort of association for lifestyle block owners, or...?
Yeah, I think now that, you know, the internet's popular, there's lots of websites and places, and you can join there's a lifestyle block association and things like that, but we've never really got into that.
Okay.
There's lots of, like, I'm in the black and coloured sheep group, and, you know, that's quite a good supportive group if you, because a lot of lifestyle people have black and coloured sheep, so... it's a way of, you get the support network within that group.
Yeah, I suppose that's the point. Is it that the lifestyle people actually support a greater diversity of livestock compared to the commercial farmers?
Because we've got this, people moved in, they've got alpacas down the road.
Okay, yeah.
Any
emus or ostriches?
No, they haven't got into the sort of more of those unusual ones, but that would be the... Most.
Yeah, because there was a time when everyone was diversifying, where they were trying lots of different... In fact, goats, there was a phase when they were...
Yeah, goats,
really,
and
then that crashed, didn't it? I don't know.
My impression is, like with the emus or the ostriches, someone has a bright idea that this is a quick fix and a way to make money, and they don't put the infrastructure in. And so, like with emu, it was a great idea. Yes, you could have all these emu products.
Yeah.
But unless someone set up the market...
That's right, they had to do all that.
You're left with something you can't sell. Yeah. So I think that's why it's never really...
I think with goats as well, when it was the new thing is going to goats, so everyone wanted goats so they could build up the stock, but once that demand for goats had gone, there wasn't the demand just for goats in general.
The cunning ones got in and sold the stock at a high price and made their money that way, and then
And deer, is that deer's more a large scale thing, is it?
Yeah, there is on further... Well, bordering some of our places on the road, next road over, there is a guy's got quite a lot of deer, because you hear the stags roaring in the autumn.
Yeah.
And
that's a farm rather than a large...
That's farmed, that's a larger farm. But I don't know. There's a lot I think there's a lot of infrastructure needed for handling deer. If you've got that as a commercial, domestic or semi-domesticated thing, that takes, could have special sheds and handling facilities. So, but no, there's a bit more work in deer.
But even with stock, though, I suppose if you've got a largish farm, then there's less chance that you'd run out of feed or you can move the stock around. But if you've just got a small block, then, you know, does that cause, probably you're more likely to run out of feed and so on?
I mean that balancing it through, like the spring, coming into spring, so I've got quite a few lambs, so, you know, you've got that doubling of your flock number, and it can be sometimes quite hard, especially sort of September, where you're running out of hay, you're a bit short, you're hoping that the weather's going to be good to be able to bring this grass growth on, and if it doesn't, then you can get short.
You have to have lower stocking numbers than if it was a large farm, do you find?
Yeah, because you just haven't got that flexibility to have that extra paddock put aside, or, you know, you need 1.5 animals rather than 2. And that's where
And you can manage it all without a dog?
Well, my dog's more of a hindrance than a help at the moment.
Aging somewhat.
An aging deaf border collie's not much use.
So with so you had, what, 2 children growing up here? Or?
Yep.
And oh yeah, you said it was really good for your daughter, but for them looking back, do they think, having grown up in an environment like this, they want to live in this sort of situation as well? Still be rural? Or?
Yeah, I think, well, with my daughter, she's gone into that rural type of farm, you know.
Oh, of course, because she's working for the
Wellington Regional Council down there, doing that type of fencing.
Well, the environmental.
Environmental stuff. So, yeah, so it's worked out really good for her.
Yeah.
And I think my son, he's sort of gone more into different areas of work, but I think just the lifestyle of growing up in the space and going to a country school, I think, was really good. They met a nice, diverse group of kids, made good friends.
Okay. So what, have you got any way of comparing that to a city school? I mean, they say they're distinct, but and there's different activities maybe with the, is it a pet and calf day?
I think having access to the animals, like, you know, William took his pet turtle along one time to Ag Day, which was quite cool.
Yeah.
And they've had, he had goats and lambs and things. But, I think it's just a different atmosphere from what people have said. And we always had very close contact. Like, we knew all the teachers by first names. You could walk into the staff
room. So a smaller
room
school than in town?
Yeah, so? I think it was under 100, the school was that sort of size. So there's 4 or 5 classrooms.
So it's just primary, you've got that, and then they were going into town.
They went into the high schools in town, so that sort of changed things, so they mixed with everybody there. But I think
the school was pretty good anyway.
It was like more of a family school, and you're always, well, I suppose because I was teacher aiding at the same school, so I was sort of involved with it more, and the community was involved. You had your locals on the Board of Trustees. My husband was on the Board of Trustees for a wee while. And there was lots of our school trips. Okay. You're always down helping out because they needed the extra help. So you're there for sports
days.
And I suppose if
you've grown up or if you're living in a community where neighbours help each other and stuff, there's more of a culture of
I think so, because we did a lot of tree planting and helping build playgrounds and got involved with fundraising for the school. So I think that's,
So for the kids there, if they've grown up going to a small country school, and then they're suddenely going to a big
1500 size high school.
Was that one a big change for them? And did they have difficulty fitting in with the kids who were used to much larger numbers?
I was concerned about that for my kids, but no, they had a really good group of friends that they went to high school with, and I think that made a big difference.
They went as a group to the same school.
Both the kids had friends at the school. So it wasn't as though they were going off as an individual suddenly into this massive high school. So, and they're both quite capable kids and very social. That's the other thing. I think the nature of the local primary school they went to gave them that opportunity mix with different people and to...
Yeah. To me, so it was a diverse group in the school.
Yeah, it was a fairly diverse background of kids. Yeah. And so it gave the opportunity to really develop their social skills, which I think was really important. You know, you can...
So was it, when you say diverse, was it you got the farmers and the lifestyle people with professional parents maybe and the farm labourers and... many Maori, for example, or non-European?
Yeah, because there was a small village, the school was in a small village, and so therefore that there was a lot of people that have moved out of town where it was cheaper to live things like that. So you had a real
mixture.
What
about migrants then? People, you know, many Chinese or Indian? Or
no, nothing. No, it was mainly like Maori, Pacific Islanders, mainly probably predominantly European.
Yeah,
from the community, but it was a nice school environment, which was good.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.